Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast. I share blueprints and big ideas, practical strategies and tips. I also tell stories of some of those big epic fails that I've made along the way, because I truly think that's part of what leads to growth as well. I interview experts, I share ideas, all because I genuinely believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential, and that there is something deeply impactful that happens when teachers empower their students with voice and choice. We've been talking lately a lot about what this looks like, that voice and choice within the domain of assessment. And as I mentioned before, I have an assessment course that you can check out. And right now it is available for 60% off, and it's called Empowered Assessment. It's all about this idea of what it looks like to empower students with voice and choice in the assessment process. I talked about the big ideas of why. We shared some ideas for helping students with self-reflection a couple weeks ago. And today, we're going to be talking about what this looks like for peer assessment. Now, years ago, I shifted toward empowering students, and I asked myself the question, what am I doing for students that they could be doing for themselves? One of the most glaring answers was assessment. So I began to incorporate peer assessment and self-assessment. I have a little sketch video on this topic if you want to take a deeper dive into what that looks like, but that's the big idea. But my first attempt at peer feedback was a crash course in what not to do. So I'm going to share with you my big epic fail with peer feedback. I had a vision of how the writer's workshop would look. Students would pore over each other's drafts, offering statements like, "Have you considered blank?" or "I appreciate the way you blank." They would lean in intently, offer their own thoughts, and jot down ideas for next steps. After some back and forth, they would switch roles and engage in the same back and forth feedback process. The feedback would be practical and instant, and it would lead to improved clarity in writing and perhaps even better word choice. They might argue over ideas and sharpen their logic and argumentation. And this workshop, it would be a buzz with excitement, followed by those small little lulls as students revised their drafts. I knew what it would look like. I began the first period class with a warm-up where students wrote about the value of peer feedback and they had a little discussion. And then I said, you'll need to find a partner who will read your work and then give you feedback. Take as long as you need. And then you can switch back and forth. And afterwards, you will find a new partner. So just a basic framework of how this might work. I explained that this was how writers helped one another improve. This was a process that professional writers used on a regular basis. They were now part of that larger collective of writers who would help one another improve in their craft. 10 minutes later, I watched as students wandered around the room. A few students pulled out their phones. This was in the pre-smartphone day where phones had even fewer options. But they were texting their friends and doing whatever else on their phone, taking pictures maybe. They talked about football and fashion and TV shows and video games and pretty much everything but the writing that they were supposed to be talking about. A few students shot paper footballs at the ceiling, and gradually the class moved from a hum to an ear-splitting roar. I quieted them down, instituted a no-moving rule, and then I added a timer for accountability. Still, it was a waste of a class period. In second period, the students took the peer feedback process a little more seriously. I reminded them of the expectation to stay focused and on the text and to share their feedback. However, the feedback was honestly a little bit too nice. It was a lot of, "This is great. It's really good. Have I told you how good it is? Great job." It was cotton candy feedback. Vague, amorphous, and overly sweet, but ultimately lacking in any real substance. In third period, students were not giving cotton candy feedback. It was more like giant shards of glass. A few students made comments like, "This sucks. None of your sentences even have periods." Two students refused to talk to each other. They just crossed their arms and stared off in the distance. Three students were in tears. And by lunchtime, I scrapped the writer's workshop entirely and had students use a checklist for self-assessment instead. Now, looking back on it, I wasn't wrong in my vision for quality peer feedback, but I didn't communicate that vision to students. I wanted them to say, "Have you considered blank?" But I didn't provide them with the sentence stems to do so. I wanted students to follow a protocol of listening and asking questions and clarifying things before they gave feedback, but I didn't share any protocols or create any structures for them. I wanted the feedback to be practical and useful, but I didn't model that for students, and I didn't set the parameters for how to give feedback or in how the feedback would be used. So I want to share 7 strategies for getting the most out of the peer assessment process. Number 1, make sure students are beginning from a place of trust. We live in a world full of unsolicited feedback. Whether it's a snarky comment on a YouTube video or a honking horn from a fellow driver. Incidentally, I learned that folks use their horns way more often in the East than they do here in Oregon. I also learned that bless your heart is the southern middle finger, if you want to know. Those are some fun things I've learned in doing some travel related to some of the workshops that I lead on project-based learning. But anyway, sometimes the feedback we receive is downright toxic. Sometimes it's just misinformed, especially when someone doesn't know the whole story of what's going on. But sometimes peer feedback is exactly what you need in order to grow. This is why feedback requires trust. Sometimes the trust is relational. Do they have my best intentions in heart? Other times the trust is more about expertise. Do I trust this person's feedback? Do I know that what they're saying is actually valid? When I taught middle school, I noticed that students often struggled to distinguish between critical feedback and insults. For all the stereotypes of middle schools being mean, I just didn't see that very often. I found that most of my students were actually a little bit too nice in their feedback, and that they really had a hard time giving and receiving critical feedback. So what I did is I created a little grid. You can imagine it this way, a continuum from the left to the right, and it goes from low trust to high trust. And then you have sort of a continuum going up and down, and that is from negative feedback to positive feedback. Okay, so I want you to imagine that. In the top left-hand corner, you have low trust and positive feedback, and that is flattery, which is manipulation. It feels good, but you can't trust the feedback. Then you have low trust and negative feedback, and this is hating. And what we know from Taylor Swift is that the haters are going to hate. But we also have negative feedback and high trust. And although it doesn't feel good and it's not really enjoyable, this is critical feedback. And it's what will allow us to grow. And then you have high trust and positive feedback, which is affirmation. And we all need affirmation. So I think it's important to recognize that that trust allows us to give and receive affirmation and critical feedback, and that thinking well about trust makes a difference. Even now as a professor, I sometimes do a simple survey that's sort of a pulse check to see how well students trust the members of their group. Here, students fill out an anonymous Google form, and it has usually 3 to 5 questions. Here's a sample of questions I might ask. On a scale of 1 to 5, How well does your group trust each other? On a scale of 1 to 5, how well do you trust your group members to complete tasks? Do you feel that you can speak freely and share ideas with your groups? Questions like that. In this case, I'm looking for trust in general and for whether or not they trust each other with tasks and with communications. Other times, questions might connect to things like conflict resolution or risk-taking. But the goal in every case is to focus on getting that pulse check of trust. All right, number 2, use structures to guide the peer feedback process. My first writer's workshop had no clear structure. Students weren't sure what they were supposed to do. And I was afraid that structure would make things less authentic. But the free-for-all led to confusion and chaos, and honestly, that wasn't very authentic. Students spent the whole time chatting and wandering around. And I later started to think about feedback in real life. True, there are times when it is unstructured. But if we take a deeper look at the seemingly unstructured peer feedback, we'll see that it often follows a pattern and a system. A friend asks you for an opinion. You spend time looking at work. You ask some questions. You give strengths and weaknesses using scripts that you don't even realize are scripts. Things like, I noticed that you blank. And that leads to a conversation and a set of next steps. Although it is not explicit and clear, you have just followed a system for peer feedback. But on a more formal level, people sometimes use structures because the limitations of the protocol actually facilitate better feedback. Whether you're part of an art collective or you're giving feedback within a corporation, structured protocols can really help facilitate better feedback. Here are some of the examples of peer feedback you might do. A 20-minute peer feedback process, which I've mentioned before. It involves several stages. You do kind of an elevator pitch, clarifying questions, feedback, paraphrasing, and then next steps. A structured feedback with sentence stems, where you have a specific sentence stems that provide diagnostic, clarifying, or critical feedback. Something like a 3-2-1 structure, 3 strengths, 2 areas of improvements, 1 question that you have. A feedback carousel, where you go around from table to table giving feedback in this sort of carousel process. Peer coaching is another option where it's more unstructured and they talk back and forth. There's a mastermind structure, which I won't get into too much, but there's a whole blog post and sketch video about it. It could be using a rubric or even using a checklist based on a rubric. So all of these are examples of peer feedback that you can do. In both cases, I want to point out that even if it's a longer process like the mastermind group, you're still following a set of structures. These all have steps to them. They all have rules and guidelines for them. And that actually allows you to give better feedback. One of the things that I'll say about this just briefly is I think it really helps to think about this feedback on a continuum from open-ended to specific. So I found that it sometimes helps to do multiple rounds of feedback. So open-ended is the beginning. You have something like the 20-minute peer feedback process. That's very open-ended. You then move into something like a see, think, wonder process focused on one key characteristic. And then you end with peer feedback with a rubric. Say that you're going, your feedback is getting more and more specific. You could also go the opposite route if you want. You could start with some specific things and then have more generalized feedback. It's really whatever works best for you as a teacher. I only bring that up because I think it can be helpful to think about how open-ended and how specific do I want my feedback to actually be. Number 3, explain the purpose of feedback. As we think about the larger scope of feedback, it's important for students to know what they are receiving feedback on and why it's important. Last week, I shared the metacognition cycle and how authentic feedback can help students think about their thinking, right? How it can improve the sense of what am I doing, where am I at, what do I need to do next? And I think it's important that we're doing the same thing with peer feedback as well, right? So it's not just with the feedback that we give them. So what do I mean by this? We need to make certain things explicit for students. What type of feedback you will receive and what type of feedback you'll give. Is it about the process or the product? Is it about accuracy of knowledge? Is it a particular skill? The key areas where students should focus on. In writing, it might be telling them to hone in on word choice. In a design thinking project, it might be feedback on the research students engage in. In math, it might be feedback on a particular approach to problem solving. What students will do with the feedback, remind them ahead of time how they will actually use their feedback. And so the idea is that they should really have a clear rationale or purpose for their feedback. Number four, don't allow students to grade one another. There's a difference between assessment and grading, and a lot of it has to do with power. Here's what I mean. It is critical that peer assessment does not become peer grading. You are the teacher and you are the expert on the content. While students can benefit from peer feedback, you as the teacher ultimately know each student's mastery level the best. Peer grading can create an unnecessary power dynamic that actually gets in the way of authentic feedback. Consider the role of peer reviews in companies. While most employees enjoy asking for feedback on a specific idea, they hate peer reviews. The biggest idea is that they feel judged and graded by their peers. There's actually a really fascinating set of research on this within the book, Nine Lies About Work. And the key gist is that people do not like being graded by their colleagues. Now, if that's true for adults, we want to avoid the same kind of power dynamics with students. When students grade one another, the focus shifts from feedback to the grade. In these moments, students don't actually use the feedback that they receive. This is actually true of teacher feedback. There's a great post from Jennifer Gonzalez who says, you know, essentially, you should give feedback first, let students revise it, and then grade it afterwards. And I think the same thing is true of the peer feedback process with students. The goal is feedback, not grading. Number five, provide revision time in class. Often in education, we value speed and accuracy more than depth and mastery. Students take timed math tests and focus on fluency when it comes to reading. They get put on, you know, reading levels for reading based on how fast they read, not really on how much they comprehend. They watch the tight time deadlines, knowing that if they fall behind, they'll be seen as slow. I've seen some students struggle with the whole idea of revision because they very rarely have needed to actually revise their work at school. But if we want students to make sense out of feedback, we need to block out time for revision. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that I sometimes talk about project-based learning and design thinking. And in both cases, I think it's important that we build in revision time. So in the launch process, for example, we have the highlight and fix phase, which really focuses on helping students to have that revision time. But the same thing can be true of just any peer feedback that we give, right? You have students give each other feedback and then create some time, even if it's a more traditional lesson, on letting students use that feedback to improve their learning. It can help to ask your students the question, what are you going to do with this feedback? Often they struggle with this. In their schooling experiences, they typically had a grade that was given and then they walked away from it. The goal is for students to become self-directed, though. If they understand the purpose of feedback, then they're going to better be able to make those modifications, set goals, and own the whole process. It can help to give students sentence frames like, I plan to use blank feedback to change blank. Or another option might be, one valuable piece of feedback is blank. I plan to blank to improve my blank. Number six, set parameters and expectations for peer feedback. What I mean is give them a set of norms. Like I mentioned before, I had students who really struggled with peer feedback, that third period group. And part of it is we just didn't set up parameters. Now, some of it had to do with low trust as a group, which I brought up as the first point. But also, we just needed to model and to talk about and to define what respectful feedback looked like. So it can help to have the class as a whole generate a set of norms connecting to peer feedback. These might relate to something like respectful language, right? What are the types of phrases you want to use? What phrases do you want to avoid? Active listening. What does it mean to listen actively? What does it mean to listen with the goal of understanding? What does active listening look like? And note, it's important that you do this in a culturally responsive language that doesn't, you know, require students to give eye contact, things like that. Focused participation. What does focused participation look like? Have students visualized this by stating the positive behaviors? Have they have them consider distractions that they might need to look out for? Being prepared. What does it mean to show up to peer feedback fully prepared? They might need to bring some work with them. They might have some questions, but it's also kind of mentally preparing yourself for feedback. Staying on topic. What do you need to do to stay on topic? Some groups, some peer feedback moments, they're going to be very tempted to just talk about unrelated things, and you want to keep them on task. So set parameters and expectations through the use of those group norms. And then finally, number seven, model and practice the peer feedback process together. Great feedback does not always come naturally. It's something that students have to learn through practice. And that shouldn't surprise us. Consider how many adults you know who are awful at giving or receiving critical feedback. For this reason, you may need to model the process with your students. It works to have a confident student give you feedback as a teacher and to explain and label each part of the process. If you want to reduce cognitive load, you might break down the peer feedback protocol and demonstrate the first step, followed by having the students then practice that step, and then you do another step, they practice it, you get the idea. This helps to solidify the process, and what it does is you're breaking the peer feedback process into multiple steps, having them practice each one separately, and then it's going to be something that becomes a part of their long-term memories. Long-term memory in general. I also think that it's helpful to have a visual. You might have a PowerPoint slide or an anchor chart that students can look at as they practice the protocol. So again, what you're trying to do is you're reducing that cognitive load as they engage in peer feedback. While this modeling process can seem slow at first, students quickly learn the protocols and the peer feedback becomes quicker and smoother. Eventually, students are giving and receiving meaningful feedback and using the feedback to clarify misconceptions, improve their skills, and take their learning to the next level. All right, well, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast? Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.